Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the July 31st, 2016 session, focusing on Hosea chapter 11, verses 1 through 11, the vulnerability of God. I'm David Cassidy.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
I'm Darian Duckworth.
This episode is the last of two sessions that we're looking at from the Old Testament book of Hosea. And we had a really interesting discussion for our last episode, so I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes tonight with chapter 11 from Hosea. So, Bert, would you be able to get us started with a little insight on this text?
I'll try. Just to repeat some background, Hosea the prophet preached in the northern kingdom of Israel somewhere in the mid-700s BCE range, roughly 200 years after the once united Israel split into the northern and southern kingdoms, for our history buffs out there. A few sessions ago, we were discussing Amos on our podcast, who also preached in the northern kingdom. Hosea came shortly after Amos, and like his predecessor, Hosea preached judgment. However, one scholar notes an important difference in their tone. Amos preached with a lion's roar, while Hosea preached with a broken heart. And I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that Amos was from the south. He was a southern agitator going up and causing some trouble up north, as we might think. But Hosea was a native to the northern kingdom, so maybe it was more personal. The story of Hosea itself is a lived-out parable of a broken heart. Hosea, of course, marries Gomer, who has some kids. Nobody knows for sure who all their daddies are, though it's pretty sure that Hosea is likely to be the daddy of all of them. Many of us find it very hard to read this story today because it can come across as sexist. Some contemporary scholars have labeled it flat-out misogynist. After all, Gomer is bluntly called a harlot who commits acts of great whoredom. But in spite of all that, the overall message is perfectly clear. Hosea simply cannot help but love Gomer, despite her unfaithfulness, her betrayal, her lengthy disappearances. The overall message of the book of Hosea is perfectly clear. In spite of the faithlessness and the running around and the abandonment of Israel, God cannot help but love Israel, and that love means God cannot and will not ever give up on them. And that's the specific theme of our focal text today, chapter 11, verses 1 through 11, that God's love is unrelenting, despite, as another scholar put it, despite Israel's unreliable love for God. And today, the preaching from Hosea portrays this relationship as a parent and child, as a loving parent with rebellious children who take what they need when they need it and they move on and they waste it and come back. Well, just listen, this is how Eugene Peterson describes it in his Message translation. When Israel was only a child, I loved him. I called out my son, called him out of Egypt. But when others called him, he ran off and left me. He worshipped the popular sex gods. He played at religion with toy gods. And despite all of this, then it comes down. The children are this stuck in this perpetual prodigal loop. They give up on God. They let God down. They run around and desert God. And then we get down to verse 8, in which it is God who, some 2,700 years before singer Rick Astley, declares to the children of Israel, I'm never going to give you up. I'm never going to let you down. I'm never going to run around and desert you. That's right. Hosea just Rickrolled the entire northern kingdom.
I was hoping you were going to do that, Bert.
That's where we are with today's text. Singing Rick Astley stuck in our head and wondering what are the little gods that we're chasing after.
Well, it's not exactly the same, you know, music of the same vein, but it calls to mind, you know, my favorite hymn, Great is Thy Faithfulness. Thy compassions, they fail not. Great hymn of faithfulness. You know, even all this has sort of a Lenten theme for me. you know, that despite our unfaithfulness, God remains faithful. It's a great reminder for us.
I was wondering if anyone had a story, perhaps from youthful years, where you discovered, you know, the unexpectedly strong love and care from someone that perhaps you didn't deserve it from anymore.
Well, I mean, I think anybody who's been married, my wife Jency and I have been married 27 years. And, you know, anybody that's, when you get past 10 or 15 years and you're still married to the same person, you kind of feel that, that sense of, that stubborn love. I mean, Jency's got it. Thank goodness.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Really, any long-standing relationship, friendship, marriage, it has to have some of that in there, right? Thankfully, we're not called to have that same kind of love for others. So, because that would be hard.
Makes life a lot easier, doesn't it?
I mean, somebody does something I don't like.
Yeah. Unfriend them.
Block. Yeah, yeah. I'm just joking. But I mean, seriously, right? I mean, we sure do like it. I love it whenever someone else is has a long-suffering kind of love for me, but it's really hard to do that for others.
Yeah, especially when there's abuse or just being taken advantage of continually.
Yeah.
You know, you think of, oh, golly, I mean, there's stories abound of a grandparent or a loving uncle or somebody who took in an unwanted child from, you know, like a unwanted grandchild or unwanted nephew or something. And they just, they spoil them because they feel bad for them. And then when the kids get older, they just keep coming back and taking and draining. And the, you know, an uncle or grandparent loses everything to this kid who comes in and takes everything, goes off, comes back 3 years later, takes what's left and goes off again. I mean, I think we all have heard family stories like that.
It reminds me of one of my favorite movies is Secondhand Lions. I don't know if you guys have seen that or not. It's really worth seeing if you haven't. But a couple of old codgers live out in the country and are rumored to have millions of dollars stowed away. And all the relatives, every relationship around them, salesmen, anybody who comes by is – they're pretty much trying to either find out where the money is or trick them out of it or, you know, get them to give it away. And this boy shows up, much like you were saying, Bert, this, I don't know if he was a nephew or what, but he shows up, ends up living with them for a period of months and is actually tasked by his mother to find out where the money is, right? So they can come and find a way to get their hands on it. And he is really the hero of the story because he chooses not to treat them that way, but instead to treat them decently. And ultimately, they become his family. It's a really great story, but your comments reminded me of that. He didn't have to do that. Everyone else was trying to take advantage, but he chose to love them.
And I think it's easy for us to forget sometimes, like especially in a case like that in the story Secondhand Lions, to the folks who are coming in trying to take advantage of, and it's easy to say, oh, you know, they are doing that. And sometimes we neglect to say, hey, we're all guilty of that at some point in time. And, and I think that's a lot of what Hosea is getting at, is that we're all guilty in some way. We're all sinners. And I absolutely loved the verse that talked about the people being bent my people are bent on turning away from me. And that just sums up very well that we're all in this state of being bent away from God. And it reminds me of one of the great hymns of Charles Wesley, Love Divine, All Loves Excelling, where there's a prayer in there that says, turn away our bent to take away, actually, our bent to sinning. And it makes me think of these trees that are bent a certain way and grow a certain direction. I just had one of them chopped down at the house here that was just growing in a direction that was dangerous for the ground under it. And this passage is just a reminder that all of us are in that same boat, that we all have that bent. But no matter how bent we are, God wants to, that God still loves us as we are and desirous relationship with us. And that's the plea and the vulnerability that's in this passage today that is very comforting and just a great reminder of that eternal love.
Mm. Yeah, this chapter really has some great imagery of the beauty of God's love for us. You know, verse 4, I led them with cords of human kindness, with bands of love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheeks. I love that metaphor, you know, of lift a baby to your cheek, just that beautiful, tender love. And interesting, another use of the word bent, I bent down to them and fed them. We turned to another use of that word bent and are bent for sinning. Despite all of this incredibly nurturing, beautiful love that God provides to us, rather than gratitude and worship and honor, we often respond with a continued bent towards sinning.
Yeah, in the last podcast we did about the first chapter of Hosea, I referenced the movie Oklahoma, but one of my favorite personal movies, which I didn't learn to like until I was in seminary, is the classic Breakfast at Tiffany's with Audrey Hepburn as Holly Golightly, and the man of the story is Paul Varjak. And I've always, when I was in seminary, I watched it and I realized it's a modern retelling of Hosea and Gomer. Now, whether or not playwright Truman Capote meant it to be, I have no idea. You know, I don't know. But, I mean, watch it sometime. And it's just this constant, steadfast, stubborn love of one man for Holly Golightly, who is insecure. She runs around in the play or in the short story that Truman Capote wrote. She's very clearly a prostitute. That's not listed or made known so much in the movie. It's kind of hinted at, and it is known that she will cheat and sleep around and run around. And every time she gets close to Paul Varjak, something happens and she just can't allow herself to be loved that way. And she runs off again. And then he's waiting there faithfully for her to receive the fullness and completeness of his love. Of course, the movie has a nice happy ending and everybody sings Moon River and so on and so forth. Truman Capote was not happy with the ending because his novel leaves it with Holly Golightly running off again, which I found that's the Hosea story. it's just the whole Hosea story that we're all so insecure that we can't allow ourselves to commit and be completely and purely loved by God as we are. We take risk, we break free, we run to impersonal relationships, we're unable to break free from the opinions of others, we're unable to break free of our own low opinions of ourselves, which we compensate for in quick approval ratings of strangers night after night, whether it's literal or however figurative you want to make that. And God is just Paul Varjak waiting and offering every time we come back to hold on to us. Hosea is just waiting every time she runs off. She comes back. But then she's going to run off again. And here we are 2,000 years later, still running off. And God is still pursuing us and waiting for us in love. Which asks, what are we running after? I mean, for 2,000 years, we've called ourselves the church. We talk about how we love God. But are we running after other gods, even while we're doing so in the name of God? I mean, with our rich, majestic buildings, and power, and of course the obvious sex.
Yeah, I'm glad, Bert, that you brought up the whole thing about how we are bent, to go back to the word bent, towards insecurity and fear, and just in constantly running from the God who's pursuing us and desiring to be in relationship with us. And it makes me think of this delightful commercial that Amazon Prime has going now. It's a young mom and dad and their baby that's probably like a year old. And the baby's terrified of the family dog. And it's the cutest, sweetest looking dog. And the dog is just wanting to play with the baby, and the baby is terrified and cries every time the dog comes near. And so the dad, so the dad figures out a plan, because the baby's favorite toy is this stuffed lion. And it's kind of ironic. The kid is scared of a dog, but not of a lion. And he, but he goes on Amazon Prime and orders this lion's mane to put on the dog, which shows that you really can order anything. But also the lengths that this father went to make his son feel secure. And he gets the lion's mane, puts it on the dog, and all of a sudden the little boy loves the dog, wants to play with the dog, is no longer scared of him. And I just see an analogy there to what God's doing in Hosea, especially towards the end of the passage, where the people are starting to return to God, and they're starting to come back and be restored. And this is just another, going back to the theme of faithfulness, that God will go to the extremes of ordering the lion's mane for the dog to make sure his children feel, God's children feel at peace. And that's just something I go back to frequently because, well, I love kids and I love dogs. And it's just something very relatable of how God meets us in our insecurity and wants us to be, to feel safe.
You know, Nikki makes several comments in her script for her video about that in this passage, we encounter this God that has feelings. And it is very much expressing these feelings. I just wonder if there's something to talk about there that, you know, are we comfortable or uncomfortable with a God who has feelings, the depth of which are expressed in this sort of passage?
Well, what I find interesting, and Nikki makes a great point, that God confesses pain, has feelings of grief, and even desire to avenge and to enact vengeance upon us. But God does not, I think she says, God does not give in to those feelings. You know, it's okay to have those feelings. And it's validation that, you know, we as people created in the image of God will have times when we are angry and frustrated and want to give up. But just as God ultimately does not give up on us, we need to hang in there as well. And certainly in our relationships with other people. And just as God finds ways to redeem us despite those negative feelings, if we would just hang in there, I think we will move beyond that and find positive ways to deal with those as well and move toward ultimately deeper relationship. I was just thinking about, you know, this God as parent metaphor is really strong. And my kids are young. I don't have a lot of experience with this, but I can imagine at least, you know, it's always hurtful to have your child hurting, whether it's hurting because of some external situation or by a bully or whatever. Those are hard and painful things as a parent. But I can imagine that it would be just as painful to see a child hurting because of, you know, what they're doing to themselves, because of poor choices that they're making, and wanting nothing more than to step in and rescue that child from that, but ultimately being unable to do that. I don't know why, but I can imagine that would be an incredibly painful thing for a parent to have to deal with, and certainly for God to have to deal with when God sees us in such dire circumstances, ultimately because of the ways we've put ourselves there. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
I mean, it makes total sense. My wife and I are in an interesting year. Both of our kids are, our son got married in April, and our daughter, her wedding is set for December. And these are exciting and joyful occasions, and we really do love their, Jonathan's wife now. I have to get used to saying that. As well as Adam, who is Megan's fiance. They're great people, and we think they've made great choices, but we know the stakes are much higher now. I mean, you know, all of us see our kids, you know, go through breakups or tough relationships in school those years. But as they get older and into adulthood, I mean, these scars can be much deeper. And I think all of us have had friends who've experienced the trauma of divorce and and loss. And, you know, I have to be honest, you know, there are nights I stay up worrying about what, you know, how's this going to turn out? Is it going to be okay? Are they going to have things turn out wonderfully, or, you know, is it going to end poorly? And the pain that, that would come from that. And it's, none of that's even happened. It probably won't, but just the fear of it, because it would be such a deep cut, is something that keeps us up, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Hmm. I'm glad to hear you say that, David. You're able to make some sense from my rambling there. That sort of what was going through my mind. But I think, you know, if we as human parents feel that way,
yeah,
God surely feels at least that much, if not more, pain when we stray and ultimately hurt ourselves.
Yes. Because, you know, Regina and I know the joy of a long-term relationship. We hope that and wish that for our children. And you know, that's probably what's going to happen. But it's that awareness of the depths of pain and suffering that can come from broken relationships that you worry about, you know. You worry about all kind of things, you know. I worry about, it is the tread enough on my daughter's car? Do I need to put new tires on, you know?
That's because you're a good dad.
Well, throughout this conversation, I couldn't help but think of one of my favorite theologians, Jürgen Moltmann, and he has I hate to read to you, but I'm going to. there's a quote from one of his works called "The Source of Life" that I think is really appropriate for this passage and the conversation we've been having. So I'll just read that and let that be our perhaps closing word. He says, "But the ultimate reason for our hope is not to be found at all in what we want, wish for, and wait for. The ultimate reason is that we are wanted and wished for and waited for. What is it that awaits us? Does anything await us at all, or are we alone? Whenever we base our hope on trust in the divine mystery, we feel deep down in our hearts, there is someone who is waiting for you, who is hoping for you, who believes in you. We are waited for as the prodigal son in the parable is waited for by his father. We are accepted and received as a mother takes her children into her arms and comforts them. God is our last hope because we are God's first love."
That's beautiful.
Amen.
Well, thank you guys for this conversation and your time with us this evening.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good night.
Thanks,
see you next time.
Good night. Good night.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.